Okay, so welcome to week two, or as I think of it, really week 1.1 of Lefnim Mishuras Hadin, since we only did 15 to 20 minutes of it last week. This is the first full week on it. God willing, it will be a topic this week and next week. I think I can wrap it next week, which would be good because then we have to discuss what Shir looks like the week of Shavuos. I'm not sure how we're going to do that, except that I know we will not have a Zoom Shir on Friday morning that week. So, we started last week with Rav Herzog's nice note about Lefnim Mishuras Hadin and the hierarchy that Micha presents in our lives as Jews. But then we launched into the story on Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. I actually brought it again on the sheet. I thought it probably would be worthwhile for it to be reproduced there. But in brief, the story is Rabba Bar Bar Hanan or somebody else, depending on your edition, has a bunch of barrels that the porters are carrying, and the porters break the barrels. So he takes their cloaks as payment for the barrels. They come to Rav. Rav says, give them back their cloaks. He says, is that really the rule? In an hour edition, Rav says, you bet. And he quotes you a pasuk in Mishlei, Leman Telech Bederech Tovim. You have to go in the path of the good. So he gives them back their cloaks. Then they say, you know, we're needy people. We worked all day long. We're starving and we have nothing because we didn't get any money for our day's work and we have no food. So he says, go pay them. He says, wait, really? Is that the law? He says, you bet. Orchos Tzadik and Tishmor, you have to guard the path of the righteous. And Rashi said that that is Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. This is the principle of going beyond the letter of the law, whereas we're going to see Tosfos disagrees and says that's not what this is actually. We noted that the Yerushalmi has a different edition, which I, again, brought briefly on the sheet in source Gimel. And there are a number of significant differences between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. One difference being, when you look at it, that everybody's anonymous in this story, other than the Chacham involved, who is Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. But it's a Kadar, is the person who owned the pots, not barrels, pots. There was a pot maker who gave them to somebody who broke them. And then that's a key difference, is it's not an Amora talking. And number two, the porters are not necessarily needy people, and I have more on that coming today. And the last bit that we did last week was to ask the question of how the barrels broke. What exactly was it that caused the barrels to break? Was this pshia? Was this carelessness on the part of the porters, or not? In the event that they were careless, the rule should be that they are liable. In the event that they were not careless, they should have to swear that they weren't careless and then pay. However, previously in the Gemara, they note that if there were people there who saw, then those are the people you produce to, as evidence that you weren't careless. You don't swear. You simply produce the people who were watching. So why is it that here we don't have witnesses declare they weren't careless? Why is it here we do not have them swear that they weren't careless? And we said there are three different approaches. The approach of Ramban is to say that actually no, when he took the cloaks, it wasn't payment for the barrels. It was in order to get them to swear. That was what he was trying to do. That was Ramban's position. Rashi, on the other hand, said no, it actually was pshia. It was carelessness, and and Ramban does not like that idea because he says then the Gemara should have said so if it was careless. But the Shulchan Aruch and the Sma are like Rashi, that it was careless. So we have Ramban saying there's an attempt to get them to swear. Rashi, who says that they were careless, and therefore there's nothing to swear, and there's no one to bring his testimony either. However, we noted Rabbeinu Hananel's position, brought in the Rif, and is that there was no pshia, and in fact the Meiri says as well there was no pshia. I didn't bring him on the sheet last week, but I brought him here in Source Zion to make Rav Sammy happy, because he liked this Meiri. The Meiri says explicitly here in Sur Zion, V'davar zeh ra'ui lefarsho b'derech zeh shetan ha'ones v'makum she'edim b'tzuyin v'lo ha'isa b'yado raya. He says the claim was that it was done b'ones. It wasn't a pshia. It wasn't a carelessness case. And there were witnesses around. And therefore, they should have been the ones to testify, but he had no proof to it. But it wasn't a Pshia case, as you continue. And then he notes, Yugidolei HaRabbanim, Rashi, having said that, in fact, it was Pshia. But the Meiri believes it was not Pshia. So if it was not Pshia, what's going on? So again, the Meiri says there were people around. He needs to bring them as evidence, but he can't bring them for some reason, and that's why the porter ends up needing to pay. That's the Meiri's explanation. I noted from Rav Yaron Unger last week that that's not the only possible explanation. Another possible explanation is that he doesn't want them to swear. They want them to pay, sorry, because he knows they would rather pay than swear, especially because they may not be sure that this wasn't Pshia, that this wasn't carelessness. That was another explanation. Okay, that's just a brief summary of where we went. What I want to do today is look at one more aspect of the story, specifically their identity as porters. I want to explore Rav's answer. Why is it that he brings the psukim from Mishle? He has a Gemara in Bava Metzia, which we're going to see. Really, if I were doing this all over again, I would have started with this other Gemara, Bava Metzia Daf Lamed, where we have psukim that seem to be biblical for Lefnim Yishuras Hadin. Why didn't he bring those psukim? I want to ask whether he meant it as psak, you have to give them back their coats and you have to pay them, or was it just advice? I want to address a couple of problems with his expectation that, in fact, Rabbi Bar Hanan should pay the porters. And then I want to start looking at the bigger issue of Lefnim Yishuras Hadin beyond our story. Once we either understand or don't understand our story, I want to get a better view of what Lefnim Yishuras Hadin is by looking at three possible biblical roots, biblical meaning Chumash, for Lefnim Yishuras Hadin, before moving into some ideas that go beyond the biblical. If there's time, we'll go at those other ideas as well. I suspect those will bleed into next week, when we'll talk about the halachic issue of compelling people for Lefnim Yishuras Hadin, and so on. Sorry, someone was saying?
Oh, yes. Just one question about the story in general. So, we're saying now Lefnim Yishuras Hadin, that's why he has to give back the coats, or why he has to pay them.
Well, we think so. Well, I shouldn't say that. One of the questions that we're going to address, I suspect this is what you're asking.
What I'm asking is, like, wouldn't it depend whether or not it's onus or Pshia?
Sorry, say that again?
Wouldn't it, the proponents say the reason is Lefnim Yishuras Hadin, wouldn't that probably also depend or should be analyzed whether it's Pshia or onus? If it's an accident, not carelessness, then you understand maybe you should give them back their coats and pay them if the insurance again. But if they're actually negligent, then I don't think if the insurance again should apply.
Right, so that's actually the one point I didn't bring in my review of last week's stuff, was the Maharil that we noted at the end last week says, no, Lefnim Yishuras Hadin even applies for a Poshea. I did bring him there on the sheet, you can see it in the Ches. But we're going to come back to it. We're going to come back to that, because I do want to note that we're going to have a discussion of a concern. Hey, by being so... so generous, you may be encouraging future Pshia. You may actually be encouraging future Pshia. Sorry, Rosemi, what were you going to say? Rosemi has something he wanted to know. He texted me privately, but he can say it for sure. Right. No, that's right. That's correct. That's correct. But we're going to come back to this, because we'll see. There's more to say within this. Okay. So so first of all, again, we noted that Rabbi Bar Hanan, at least in our edition, is an Amora. We're going to, as opposed to in the Yerushalmi's version of it, I'm going to come back to whether that affects the requirement for him to go with Yishuras Hadin. The answer is maybe. But their identity as porters, does that matter? You could argue, yes, it does matter. They are needy, they are hungry, as was specified in our story. Next week, we're going to talk about there being a greater imperative for Lefnim Bishuras Hadin when there's a wealth imbalance between the person who is being asked to do Lefnim Bishuras Hadin and the person who is receiving the Lefnim Bishuras Hadin. That the idea is, let's take the case that we're going to see shortly in the Gemara where somebody lost an object and I found it. If I am wealthy and the person who lost the object is not wealthy, there may be a greater imperative for me to return it. So that's something that may make it significant that they are porters. And in fact, the Pisrei Choshen, I did not retype it here on the sheet, but the Pisrei Choshen in Chelek Gimel Perek Ches Ha'ara Pehe brings a view that Rav only said this. He only said you had to pay them because they needed this for their survival. Now that may not only apply to a porter. The Pisrei Choshen in Chelek Gimel Perek Aleph Ha'ara Yud Zayin quotes a sefer called the Shvilei David, which I did not look up to see who the Shvilei David is, but the Shvilei David has a tshuva applying this to a housekeeper. Saying that, you know, also the same type of economic imbalance, usually, even if not a porter specifically. However, there's good reason to say that it doesn't have to be a porter, that in fact, my Lefnim Bishuras Hadin obligation will apply for anybody who did a job. After all, as we noted, the Yerushalmi did not say it was a porter. The Yerushalmi just said you gave it to Barnash, some guy. And the Meiri, in his introduction to this, in source test, says, Shomer Sachar Shene Enas. He will go on to bring the language of our case, which involves Shakuloi, porters. However, he begins by saying, Hey, Shomer Sachar. So and that's the Gemara's context. So you can argue that maybe it doesn't make a difference who they are. And some actually split the difference. And they say, it depends on which part of this we are talking about. And this is where I come back to Jeffrey's, not really to Jeffrey's point. Jeffrey's point, where I thought you were going first when you spoke, Jeffrey, and then you shifted. But some split the difference and say, we expected two things from Rabbi Barbar Hanan. We expected him, number one, not to claim damages, and number two, to pay salary. So some make the suggestion that Lefnim Bishuras Hadin exempts them from liability even if they're not needy. And then if they're needy, pay them a salary as well. So if you take a look at Source Yud, bottom of the first side, he describes a case in which you are indeed posheya, you were indeed careless, and it broke. And he says you're liable, even if you're a shomer chinam. Mikol makom mitzvahu lasa slo lefnim mishuras hadin relitein lo scharo. However, the mitzvah to go lefnim mishuras hadin and pay him im ein lo mayochal, if he doesn't have anything to eat. So the wording there is interesting. Mitzvah to go lefnim mishuras hadin, and to pay him if he has nothing to eat. Now the truth is, left to my own devices, I would read that and say he's not distinguishing between exempting them from liability and paying them. They're both lefnim mishuras hadin if they have nothing to eat. However, if you flip the page to Source Yud Aleph, and you look at the Prisha, or since you're all on Zoom, you can just scroll down on your computer screen. Either way, he said the Prisha says no. Lasos lefnim perush lepotro mitashlumin. To act lefnim mishuras hadin is exemption from payment. V'gam mitzvah afilu liten lo skaro im huani etc. Also, it's a mitzvah of paying him if he is a pauper. Mashmali deleinyan tashlumin afilu muasher ein lechayvo. As far as requiring the guy who broke the barrels to pay, you should always exempt him. It doesn't matter whether he's needy or not. It doesn't matter. You hired somebody to work with your property. He destroyed your property. It doesn't matter how needy he is. Hey, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Pshia happens. That's what he says. Afilu kodem sheyada shehayu aniyim. Before Rav even knew they were needy. Tziva Rav shein lechayvim b'tashlumin. Rav says, exempt them from payment. So that's the position of the tour as explained by the Prisha. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav as well says that. In Shelus Chirus Yotes, he takes the same position. Why does that make sense? Not why does it make sense to exempt somebody from liability for what he broke. I want to come back to that part of it. But why does it make sense to distinguish between exemption from liability on the one hand, and paying him for his job on the other. Why would I say that you should exempt everybody, but only pay a person who's needy, a person who's an ani? So I think it fits with an idea we're going to see in the Gra on Mishlei. I didn't get to it yet, but we'll see an idea in the Gra on that pasuk in Mishlei that Rav brings. L'man teilech derech tovim ve'orech tzadikim tishmor. He says tovim is everybody. Everybody's a tov. You're all tovim. Orech tzadikim, that's something that's on a higher plane, and maybe we only demand that in the event that they are needy. It will also fit. Sorry.
Essentially, it's
a Gzeiras HaKasuv. It will also fit with Rabbi Bar Bar Hanan, with his thinking, right? Because what happened here, right? The porters went to Rav and said, look what he did. He took our coats. And Rav says, give them back their coats. So he gives them the coats, but he doesn't decide on his own, I guess I should pay them too. In Rabbi Bar Bar Hanan's thinking, it was not logical to say that just because I'm not billing them doesn't mean that I'm paying them. He saw a distinction. And I think it does make sense, because it avoids taking money from them without rewarding them for a job they didn't do. Right? It's one thing to say, I'm not going to punish you for breaking my barrels. It's another thing to say, and by the way, here's your day's wages. I think it makes sense, this position that the tour takes, that the Shulchan Aruch HaRav takes. I think there's a lot to recommend it. I think so. But the big question on this, well, there are two big questions, I should say, on this story. The first big question is, why did Rav bring the wrong psukim? Why did Rav insist on quoting Mishlei? No offense to Mishlei. Ezra Dienig is a Mishlei Chavura on Wednesday mornings, and I am certain that our pasuk here is going to feature whenever he gets up to that parak.
We already featured it.
Already featured. Fine. But what I don't follow here is, why are you using Mishlei? You have a pasuk in Sefer Shmos. Take a look at Source Yud Beis. Part of what I really should have brought in the beginning of the shiur, and if I ever teach this again, I likely will. But Bav Metzia Lamud Omud Beis. This is the second part of a two-part story. We'll come back to the first part of it later. It involves Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yossi acting lifnim mishuras hadin. So the Gemara picking up from there in Yud Beis says, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yossi lifnim mishuras hadin hu da'avad. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yossi acted beyond what the law would demand. Tani Rabbi Yosef, as Rabbi Yosef taught. In Parshas Yisro, when Yisro gives Moshe advice about setting up Batei Din, he says, "Vahodata lahem es haderech yelchu ba ve'es ha'maaseh asher ya'asun." You shall inform them, the nation, of the path they will walk and the deeds they shall perform. That's the way I would have translated that pasuk if I didn't know there was a Gemara that decides to translate it entirely differently. V'hodata lahem, you shall inform them, ze beis chayehem. This is the house of their lives, which right now I will translate either as Talmud Torah or learning a trade. We may come back to that, not this week, in the Knesset Yechezkel, he has a different read. But Rashi has a different read, because Yechezkel explains Rashi. But he says, hodata lahem, tell them how to live. Es haderech, what is derech? That's gemilus chasadim. Yelchu, the derech that they will walk, is a specific, particular kind of chesed. Zebikur cholim, taking care of the ill. Ba, haderech yelchu ba, zo kavura, that's burial. Ve'ez hamaaseh, and the deed, zehadin, and asher yasun, that they shall do, I'm translating it as right now, zo lifnim mishuras hadin. That is to go beyond the letter of the law. I want to come back to the drasha of asher yasun a little bit later, but right now, the key for us, and I'm going to read the rest of the Gemara that's here, because it's important, but I just want to pause and say, you have a pasuk in Parshas Yisro. Why in the world, without meaning to offend Shlomo HaMelech, did you decide to... whoops, my screen went blank. And So again, as we were, the Gemara here brings me a pasuk from Parshas Yisro. I should have been very happy to have a pasuk in Parshas Yisro. I didn't need a pasuk in Mishlei. Just to finish the Gemara, Asher Yasun Zul Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. We spell out the importance of Lifnim Mishuras Hadin by saying to Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says Lo Charva Yerushalayim. El al shadanu badin Torah. Yerushalayim was destroyed only because they dealt with it. They dealt on the basis of Torah law, to which the Gemara says, "I don't understand." The El adina demechiz demegiz de ladaino. Okay, I am back on this way. Oh, that bad feedback. Okay, okay, we're good. Back where we were. The Gemara asks, what do you mean? What was wrong with using Din Torah? What would have been wrong with Din Torah? El Adina de Megiz de Ladainu. Should they have been magicians, idolaters? Should they have used some other system? No. Sheminu Dineim al Din Torah v'lo avdu lefnim mishuras hadin. Yerushalayim is destroyed because you did not act lefnim mishuras hadin. But the point for us again is, I have Psukim in Parshas Yisro. Why did Rav insist on bringing Mishlei? Satosfos in Bav as well as Bava Kama Kuf Amud Aleph, offers us a very, very important view. He says, Torchiner misled you when he said that the case on Pei Gimel was the Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. It's not really the Lifnim Mishuras Hadin at all. There are three different classes of cases, and some are Lifnim Mishuras Hadin with the Pasuk in Yisro. Some are Lifnim Mishuras Hadin without a Pasuk, and some are not Lifnim Mishuras Hadin at all, but rather are this Pasuk in Mishlei, which is giving me something else entirely. Instead of going through the cases specifically, because we haven't actually looked at the cases themselves yet, I just highlighted the key points in Yud Gimel from that Tosfos. He says, "B'makom she'acherim chayavin v'hu patur." If you have a case in which other people in your position, other people who are not in your position, but faced with this situation, would have an obligation to act, it's lifnim mishuras hadin for you to act. So I'll give you one example from the cases that we're going to see. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yosi is faced with a position in which somebody needs help loading up wood to carry it or dealing with some kind of a burden. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yosi is elderly and he's not obligated to do so. He chooses to solve the problem by buying the wood from the guy, so that the guy will no longer have a burden that he needs help with. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yosi is acting with Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. He has no obligation to actually help with that burden at all. But because other people who are not elderly would be obligated, he has Lifnim Mishuras Hadin, and that's where you use the pasuk from Parshas Yisro. As opposed to, you have a case in which nobody would be obligated at all. So we're going to see a case in which you come across an object in the marketplace that somebody lost, but it was lost more than a year ago. It was lost in a very, very public place where everyone has yeyush, everyone gives up hope of ever seeing it again. In a case like that, in a case where no one is going to have any claim on it, and no one has any obligation to give it, we will call that lifnim mishuras hadin, but we're not going to quote the pasuk in Yisro. And then the third category is our case. And in our case, not only would everybody be exempt from an obligation, but you actually are taking a loss in order to act with Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. Because in this case, I'm going to have to, number one, be without my barrels, and then number two, I'm going to have to pay them. Right? In a case where I find something in the market, easy come, easy go. It was never mine in the first place. I didn't lose anything. In this case, I suffer a loss, and nobody would be obligated to do it. So he says, that's not even Lifnim Mishuras Hadin at all. As he writes, if you look at the last line in that Tosfos, in Yud Gimel, Mishum Lifnim Mishuras Hadin, Ein Lo Lahafsid. Lifnim Mishuras Hadin should not require you to take a loss. So that's Tosfos' way of dealing with it. That's why we didn't use the Pasuk from Yisro, because the Pasuk from Yisro is irrelevant. Clear? That's the idea. This isn't Lifnim Mishuras Hadin at all, if you're eating a loss. This fits with an idea from Rav Kook, which I brought you here in source Tesvav. By the way, in your Dalet, I just brought you a Mishnah, which we're actually going to have to come back to later. But it's a simple Mishnah that reflects Tosus's approach. Avedaso v'avedas. Oh, I brought the wrong one. That's funny. All right, I brought the wrong piece of that Mishnah, but it'll help also. It says that if it's a choice between saving my property that was lost and saving my father's property that was lost, my property comes first. That happens to be true, but my point was to bring the part about Avedaso Avedas Acherim. My property that's lost and anybody else's property that's lost, as a general rule, my property comes first. That explains Tosus's point, right? If I am going to have to eat a loss, that's not Lifnei Mishuras Hadin. My property comes first. But this does fit Rav Kook's point. Rav Kook's point, I didn't look in the Be'er Eliyahu for this. The Be'er Eliyahu was not on Hebrew books, and I didn't go into Otzer for it this time. But instead, it was brought in an article called The Mantelich B'derech Tovim by Moshe Drucker, Matan Goldberger, in source Tezvav. You can find their paper on Asif, in which they quote you, Rav Kook, in the Be'er Eliyahu, and he says, if you look, Yesh lahavchin ben gemilas chasadim lebein lefnei mishuras hadin. He says, we should distinguish between chesed and lefnei mishuras hadin. They're not the same thing. B'mikresh shel ha'poalim, in the case of the workers, right, our porters, bo ha'chacham mafsid kesef la'asiyas lefnei mishuras hadin, mu'va pasuk b'mishlei. He says, in our Gemara, Rabbi Bar Hanan is going to lose money to do lefnei mishuras hadin. You get a pasuk from Mishlei. Kan meduber v'gmilas chasadin bilvad. That's just chesed. Whereas, in the case on Chavdalot Amibes, which we're going to see about returning a lost object, lefnei mishuras hadin, there's no pasuk. Kan meduber al lefnei mishuras hadin. Hakarov l'gmilas chasadin. That's lefnei mishuras hadin, which is close to chesed, as opposed to the case on Daf Lamed, which is the case of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi, that's lefnei mishuras hadin. What's the difference? So he says, the concept of, and it's the second paragraph in Tesvah, but I'm looking at the time, what he says is, the closer you are to din, the more likely we are to call it lefnei mishuras hadin. The further you go from din, the more likely we are to just say, this is pure chesed. That's the way that we look at this. Rav Avram Sherman does something with this also in source Tezayin, but I've decided I'm not going to go with his discussion here. I brought it for you. It's his attempt to explain Tosvos. But I'm gonna skip that. Those who want to see it can see it there in source Tezayin. Separate note. Yes, Ezra.
Question number one is, if this is true chesed, how do you defend the reading of the Gemara then? It's the psak of the Dayanim.
Correct.
Not even the Lefnei Mishuras Hadin.
Correct. So I'm going to come back to that when I talk about whether this is actually psak.
Okay. And second of all is, why then wouldn't he bring any pasuk of tzedakah or chesed from the Torah? Why then?
Right. Why is he bringing Leman Telech B'derech Tovim as opposed to a generic sort of V'ahavta L'reacha Kamocha? Everyone's face is froze. If everyone's face is froze, it's probably me, right? Hello? So, again, we're going to just do this without being able to see everybody, and hopefully the Chaim Wi-Fi has a refuah shlema. So you just stay in here, and that'll be that. We have no phone option. So, again, to address Ezra's question, Ezra asked, why in the world did you not bring one of the fine, you know, chesed psukim that we have in Chumash instead of bringing me a chesed pasuk from Mishlei? And the answer is Rav loved Sefer Mishlei. No, the answer, I think, is because of something we're about to say from the Gra, which is that this pasuk in particular, by talking about Tovim and Tzadikim, makes it not a general chesed thing, but chesed for particular people. And I don't think you find that in the Chumash's Psukim about Chesed. I think the Chumash's Psukim impose a general obligation, like Ba'al Recha Kamocha, you know, give tzedakah and so on. They don't speak to different classes of givers. That would be my Al Regal Achas answer. But I think you're right that it's a good question. You were going to ask a separate question also, no?
That was one question. The other question was, how do you explain the Gemara on
Right, so that's again, right, so again, that's where I'm coming back to. Okay, so the if you're looking at the source sheet, the Yud Zayin, this is actually what I was just referring to about there being different classes of givers, and this is the Gra that I quoted you earlier. He says, Tov hu nikra hametiv im habrios. Vitzadik, who ha'osa tzedakos v'nosein mishalo lebrios v'chinam. He says, Tov is somebody who benefits others. Tzadik is somebody who performs kindness to others, righteousness to others. V'nosein mishalo lebrios v'chinam. He gives to others for free. Av shalo haya ra'oi. Even though he wasn't, the recipient wasn't worthy. V'av lehetiv imayim, v'hu osa otzdaka imayim. Zeu nikra tzadik. V'hu yosim en atovim. That's a tzadik. That's better than a tov. There are fewer of those because that's a harder thing to do, to give to people who don't necessarily deserve it. So he says, this is the Gra's idea. It explains why Rabbi Bar Chana thinks that Laman Telech V'Derech Tovim won't include paying them. They because this is more than just paying them. This is more than just holding them, not holding them responsible for the barrels. This is going even beyond that. That's something for tzaddikim. Okay, that's in terms of the pasuk from Mishlei. So what we're saying is he quotes Mishlei according to Tosfos because it's not really a lefnim mishuras hadin case. And by the way, this pasuk has a two-tiered tovim tzaddikim layer to it, which I think answers Ezra's question. And in general, it fits the story very well in terms of the double question. But now let's get to the key thing, which is this actually a halachic ruling? You are obligated to do this. So I'm going to deal with this in part this week and in part next week. Next week I want to discuss the issue of kofin, whether a beis din can actually coerce people to act with lefnim mishuras hadin. But right now I want to understand it in the terms of our story. So the simple read is, you bet, this is psak, right? If I could see you, then I would ask you to answer this question of how I know it's psak. But because we already lost a lot of time and because I can't see you, I'm just going to explain. The story itself sounds like it's psak because Rabbi Bar Chana doesn't want to do it, right? He says, I don't want to pay. So that sounds like it's a psak. Why not say it's psak? So first of all, just when you look at the Yerushalmi, it's not psak, right? If you go back to the Yerushalmi text that that I gave you in the beginning of the sheet, the Yerushalmi in Source Gimel just said they came to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, and Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina said, "Go tell him this pasuk." That's all he said. Go tell him this pasuk. That doesn't sound like a psak. That's number one. Number two, Rav's wording here is very interesting. Go back to the riff in Source Vav. Specifically the second half of the riff in Source Vav, where he says, Va'achor Rabbeinu Chananel Zalaitayma Basra, right? You see that there? So in that paragraph, the middle of the second line of that paragraph, Va'amar Le Rabbah, Rabbah said to him, Dina Achi, right? Is this the law? V'lo amar le'in, and he did not say yes. Unlike the addition that we had in it, in Source Aleph, where the second line, amar le'in, he said yes, and here's a pasuk. In the addition that the Rif has, and the Baal HaIter for that matter, he doesn't say yes. The question is this the law? And the answer is, here's a pasuk in Mishlei. He may be a Knas, you should see the Marsha there at some point also, I didn't bring him on the sheet. He may indeed be acknowledging that it's not din at all. Rav Menachem Elon in Hamishpat HaIvri has a very nice discussion about this whole issue of Lefnim Mishuras HaDin in the first volume. He, very much Kedarko, loves the idea of Lefnim Mishuras HaDin and wants to see Batei Din practice Lefnim Mishuras HaDin. He wants to see Beis HaMishpat, Mishpat Ivri incorporate Lefnim Mishuras HaDin. And he quotes Yefraim Orbach in Source Ches. He says, Daito Yud Ches, I should say. Daito Shel Orbach. Orbach's view in Pirkei Emunas Videos. This is Yefraim Orbach. Shemei Achar. Okay, it should be ein. I retyped this, and I have a typo. So shemayachar she'ein ligros es hamila in, that since the edition should not have the word in, meaning kain, in Rav's answer, shuv ein kol hochacham yisug yezu sheladas Rav b'mikra zelif min mishuras hadin, yesh bo min hadin. There is no evidence from here that din is actually involved. So he says that's Ephraim Orbach's argument, is if there's no in, then that means this isn't really an imposed din. However, he says, Eina muchrachas. He says, that's not a given that that's so. Gam ha-bach maybe is nusach ha-sugya, velo garas is hamila in. The Bach, when he discusses this, which we have to get back to next week, the Bach brings the text of the story, velo garas is hamila in. He did not have the word in his presentation, and yet he concluded that you can compel people to do lifnim mishuras hadin. So Rav Elon is not convinced that the lack of the word in actually matters. Sorry?
If you're able to enforce it, what makes it a mishra?
So that's one of the things we're going to come back to. That's a very good question. Hold the question. But yes, you are. You know what? Let me come back. Let me say what you are saying now, because you asked it now. And then we'll come back to what I have in the middle. If you jump down in your sheet to Source Chav Zayin, the Tzitz Eliezer, you see that? Not the Tzitz Eliezer. Sorry. The Tzitz Eliezer is the answer to your question. So what I was going to say was that from a logical perspective, by definition, lefnim bishuras hadin means it's not din. Right? Means it's not psak. Otherwise we wouldn't call it lefnim bishuras hadin. Assuming we're following Rashi, that Rav's thing is lefnim bishuras hadin. Remember, Tosos doesn't even think it's that. But why are you calling it lefnim bishuras hadin? But I thought that you could solve this problem. You could solve it by suggesting that this one case is indeed din. Going back to what we said before about Tovim and Tzadikim, and saying that Rabbi Bar Chana is obligated to do it because of who he is, so it's lefnim mishuras hadin for everybody else, but for you it's din. And that's the Tzitz Eliezer's position in Source Chav Zayin. If you look at the part that I bolded, he says, "Maze tshuva, the who shala who din Torah? Did Tzarek lashalem glimayu l'shalem agrayu?" He asked, "Is the Torah requiring me to give them back their cloaks, to pay them their salary?" V'hu heishavlo the kain kasu b'sefer mishlei, and he gave him an answer of mishlei. V'lo yaduah the chol sefer mishlei eno elam midos u'musarim. He says, "Mishlei is musar. Don't tell me that mishlei is going to be the source for an obligation." He says, "It's all the other says. I don't understand." Why that will be an answer. So if you flip the page or scroll down to the second part that I bolded, Mashma dehatovim yeshlem derech acher shelo kishar b'nei adam. If you are a tov, you have a different way to do business. And yes, for you, this becomes din, even though it's lifnim bishuras hadin for others. I'm going to come back to that idea. That's just a little bit of a beginning of an answer to your question. Moshe?
Yeah, it's also different from what we said that tovim is everyone, right?
Yes, this would not agree with the Gra that Tovim is everybody. Unlike the Gra that Tovim is for everyone. If you were here, or if I could show you my screen, I would show you my notes where it says, unlike Gra on the Pasuk in Mishlei, that the Tovim part is for everyone, and unlike Yerushalmi that thinks this isn't an Amora at all. Correct. So I'm going to come back to this point to expand on it, but first, I want to go back to another challenge with this, which is the text, meaning this isn't our only lifnim mishuras hadin story. We have a whole bunch of stories of lifnim mishuras hadin in the Gemara, and the cases that we actually know are lifnim mishuras hadin generally don't involve psak and don't involve a beis din at all. If you look on your sheet, specifically, I want you to look at source Yud Tes. This is the first part of the story involving Rabbi Yishmael b'Rabbi Yossi. The discussion about, you know, the pasuk from Yisro and all of that is a response to this story of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. So in deference to the clock, I'm going to say these stories outside, but you can read them yourselves there. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is traveling on the road. He meets a guy who is carrying a bunch of wood, and the guy puts it down. He's taking a break, and then he says to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, pick him up with me. He says to him, how much is it worth? He says, half a zuz. Half a zuz. Okay, quarter of a young goat. So he says, I'm going to give you half a zuz. He buys the wood off of him, and then he makes it hefker. He has no interest in the wood. He's just, you know, doing this in order to fulfill the prika uteina, since he can't be porik v'towing. Or since he's not supposed to be, because he's a zakein. That's his own discussion. Can he forgive his kavod or not? Then this fellow knows a good business deal when he sees one, and he acquires the wood. He picks up enough of the wood to do a kinyan. So Rishon Rabbi Yossi gives him another half a zuz. And again, renders it hefker. He sees the guy going back to pick up the wood again. And he says to him, no. I made this hefker for everybody but you. It's called partial hefker. The Gemara has a nice discussion then about the fact that you can't actually do that. That's not called hefker then. But he was just trying to get the guy not to put him in a position where he was going to need to act with Nimi Shuras Adin again. And the Gemara asks, he was a zakein. This wasn't fitting for his dignity. He wouldn't have picked this up for himself. Yeah, he went with Nimi Shuras Adin, as Rabbi Yosef said, and so on. There, it's a personal decision. There's no court ordering him that he has to do this. He decided to do it on his own. Ditto the Gemara Bava Kama Tzadi Tes in source Chaf. Woman comes to Rabbi Chia, who was an expert money examiner. He was fully trained. He could examine coins, tell you if they're valid, such that you'd be able to know, you could accept them in a business deal and know that you'll be able to spend them somewhere else. So she shows the coin to Rabbi Chia. He says, yep, that's a good coin. She accepts the coin in her business deal. The next day she comes back to him and she says, you know what? I tried to spend it and they told me it was no good. So Rabbi Chia says to Rav being, remember, his double nephew, from nephew on both sides, he says, go give her a new coin and record it in my ledger saying this was a bad deal. So the Gemara says, wait, why is Rabbi Chia obligated? Danku and Isser were expert money changers, and they would have been exempt in such a circumstance? And the answer is, yes. Because they were experts. They had nothing else to learn. To which the Gemara says, yeah, but Rabbi Chia also was an expert. He had nothing else to learn. That's true. It was Lefnei Mishuras Adin. He did it Lefnei Mishuras Adin. And again, they quote you, Rabbi Yosef, with the pasuk from Yisro. In both of these cases, it's true Lefnei Mishuras Adin within Tosfos' standard. Because other people would have been obligated. You're not obligated because you are an expert money changer. You're not obligated because you're a zakein. But it's Lefnei Mishuras Adin. So those are cases where there's no Beis Din and there's no psak. Not only that, for the cases of Lefnei Mishuras Adin that don't quote psukim, there's no Beis Din involved. In source Chaf Aleph, the Gemara in Ksuvos, somebody sold land to Rav Papa because the guy needed money in order to go buy oxen. Then the guy didn't need the money. He comes back to Rav Papa. He says, I want my land back. Rav Papa says, okay, you're not obligated to return him the land. Why should you be obligated to return him the land? You're right. It was Lefnei Mishuras Adin. He went beyond the obligation of Lefnei Mishuras Adin. Again, it was a personal decision. Ditto of Mitzia Chaptal Adam and Beis. In Source Chaf Beis. You get this great story, and then you get this bizarre piece that we have to add to the story. But let's see the great story first. Rabbi Yehuda and Mar Shmuel are traveling in the market. Remember, Rabbi Yehuda was a Talmud of both Rav and Shmuel. So Rabbi Yehuda is walking with his Rebbe Shmuel in the marketplace in Beidisa. And he says, if you find a wallet here, what's the din? Do you have to return it? So he says, no, you get to keep it. What if a guy comes along, a Jew comes along, and gives you a simon for it? He says, I can show you it's mine. Well, then you have to give it back. So he says, Tardi, I don't understand. It's mine, but I have to give it back? So he says, no, you give it back, lefnim mishura sadin. But he's not telling him chiyuv. He's saying, lefnim mishura sadin, letter of the law, harayelu shalom. And they give you a story, which is similar, in which Shmuel's father found donkeys out in the wilderness and returned them to the master, even though 12 months elapsed. There's definitely yayush. He definitely gave up hope. Nonetheless, he returned it, lefnim mishura sadin. Yeah, but he also says with Nimbishua's Hadin, and he said Haray Shalo. I think his chayav is not a psak, because it's not a story. He's asking him what are the rules. That's the way I understood that case. I hear your point. Lifnim. I hear what you're saying. I hear you. I also added a parenthetical note, just because this Gemara makes the point that Hashavas Aveda, returning objects, is an obligation if a Jew comes along and gives it to you. Why would we make a Jew-non-Jew distinction? So the Rashba, no, it's a classic idea, but I like the fact that it's the Rashba saying it and not somebody today trying to apologize for things. That the law of Ribbis, as well as the law of Hashavas Aveda, are lihis chaseid im ha'achin, in order to do chesed with family. In other words, these are by definition considered lifnim mishuras adin. Returning lost objects in general is something that people don't do, and therefore you have to go above and beyond for family, not beyond family. One other case of lifnim mishuras adin in Brachos Memheim with Beis, source Chav Dalid, where we say that if three are sitting together and they had enough food, bread, whatever we're talking about, I don't want to get into that now, to qualify for a mezuman, if one of them is ready to bench and the other two are not, they have no obligation to stop for him. However, Rav Papa, we are told, did stop for his son Abba, or Abba Mar. He stopped when Abba Mar and somebody else needed to, I'm sorry, he and someone else stopped for Abba Mar to be able to bench. To which the Gemara answers, Rav Papa did it, lefnim mishuras adin. These cases are not psak from a beis din. Granted, he said the word chayav was used on the case of the Aveda. But these cases are not based in cases. I should note that there is one case where at least one Rishon thinks lefnim mishuras adin should be applied in a based in case, and that's the Gemara with Runya in Baba Basra Hey Amid Aleph in Source Chav Hey. I'm going to skip it in the interests of time, but it is worth noting that you do have the Ritzba and the Shita Mekubetzes in Source Chav Vav applying lefnim mishuras adin in a case that does seem to be a psak one. So there is a case like that. But that's one, again, our objections to saying it's psak are, first of all, the Yerushalmi did not have it as psak. Rav, in some editions, does not say in. Granted that Elon is not impressed, based on the Bach. The text doesn't, you know, most of these stories, if not all of them, do not involve psak and a basin. And then, Moshe's point about the logic of it. If it's the lefnim mishuras adin, you're not obligated to do so. So the answer could be to say, you're generally not obligated to do so. However, in this case, he's obligated because he's somebody special. And in that article, Amantelech B'derech Tovim, by Moshe Drucker and Matan Goldberger, they make a good case for the idea that lefnim mishuras adin applies specifically to people of special righteousness. If you take a look in Source Chaf Ches, this is the Shita Mekubetzes writing on the Gemara of Metziah Chav Dalet Amud Beis, the story about returning the lost object, and the guy who's screaming, "But it's mine! But it's mine!" So if you look at Source Chaf Ches, Shita Mekubetzes writes from Rabbi Yonasan, "Lemi she'eno kol kach adam chashuv." He says, I skipped something I should not have skipped. Go back to Chav Dalet Amud Beis. I got distracted. The second half of Source Chav Beis. This is the ugly part of Source Chav Beis, so to speak. The hard part. Rava is traveling with Rav Nachman in the Shuk. The Shuk of the leather workers. Or the Shuk of the rabbis. We'll come back to the difference next week, God willing. But he's traveling in the marketplace and he says, what if I find a wallet here? And he says, you get to keep it. What if, again, somebody comes and gives you a sign that it's his? He says, too bad, you get to keep it. But the guy's yelling and screaming! Yeah, it's like the guy who was yelling and screaming when his house collapses. It didn't change the fact that his house collapsed. The guy's yelling and screaming that his boat sank in the sea. Okay, his boat sank in the sea. It didn't reverse the boat. It didn't reverse the house. So too here, he can yell and scream all he wants that it's his. He lost it. says the Shita Mekubetzes in source Chav Ches regarding that, the Shita Mekubetzes, Rabbeinu Yohanan, is bothered. How can Rav Nachman say that? Didn't he know what Shmuel said? Shmuel said that you do have to return it. Lefnei Mishuras Adin. So the Shita Mekubetzes gives us an answer. We'll see other answers next week, God willing. But the Shita Mekubetzes' answer is that that Rav Nachman is talking about if you're not such an important guy. If you're not such a great guy, then you don't have an obligation. It's lifnim mishuras hadin for you. It's din for someone like Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, to go back to our case. They and Moshe Drucker and Matan Goldberger point out a series of comments in the Rambam which support this idea, and because it's 1128, I'm not going to read them aloud. Just to show you, though, in Gzeila Va'aveda, the Rambam talks about in Chavtes, Harotza Lelech B'derech HaTov V'Yashar, somebody who wants to go in the way of the Tov V'Yashar. In and of itself, I wouldn't take that one as proof of the Rambam's position. However, it's stronger in his other ones. In Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, in source Lamed, he talks about Chilul Hashem in the event that you are known as a Chacham and you don't act Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. It's because you're known as a Chacham. In Lamed Aleph, he talks about someone who is Medakdek Al Atmo in Hilchos Deo, someone who's careful with himself and goes to extremes to be pious, and the Chasidim HaRishonim who used to do that. And then in Lamed Beis, he says to you, if you are a Chasid and you act Lifnim Mishuras Hadin and you see somebody's animals, you have to go help them. What's the rationale? Rashi and Ksuvos in source Lamed Gimel, I quoted this in our COR shir, about the Vada Kashrus ethics issues. He says, people learn from an Adam Chashuv, and therefore you better make sure to act properly. It's similar to the Ritva in Shabbos Nun Aleph, which Drucker and Goldberger bring. So, you may have a special obligation because you are a special person. That's the idea. There could be additional support for this from a separate point I want to come back to, which is, we have a general rule, which is that Dayanim, judges, are not allowed to favor needy people in Beis Din. So how would a Dayan even be allowed to do any of this? How would a Dayan be allowed to tell people, act with Nimi Shuras Hadin, he's a needy guy? The answer may be that it's because of who you are. It's not about who the recipient is, it's who the giver is. That he's an Adam Chashuv, he has a requirement. So what we've seen, and again, I'm sorry for the glitch, the technology glitch, I don't know what is up with the Wi-Fi right now, hopefully that will be fixed, but at least what we've accomplished besides the review is that their identity as porters may well matter. They're needy and they're hungry and there's a wealth imbalance. At least it may be effective in terms of requiring that you pay them, if not for requiring that you absolve them of liability. The Rav brings the pasuk in Mishle. According to Tosfos, that's because this isn't really Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. He has his three-part classification. Lifnim Mishuras Hadin at its core is really only where others are obligated and you are personally exempt. And in terms of whether this is Psak, it sounds like Psak in our story, but we have four reasons to say it's not. The Yerushalmi does not have the word. The Yerushalmi version does not present it as Psak at all. Also, some editions don't have the word in, even in the Bavli. The other cases we are familiar with, with the possible exception of Bav Metzia Chavdalid and the Ritzba in Bava Basra Hayamid Aleph, are not based in cases. And finally, logically, Lifnim Mishuras Hadin should be non-Psak by definition, although maybe it's specifically Psak here because of who Rabbi Bar Bar Chana is. A little bit more on this story to see next week in terms of whether Rav's statement is Psak and challenges to it before going into the broader issue of the nature of Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. Thank you very much.